And welcome to our monthly commission meeting. So let us please all begin by rising and starting with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
I'm always afraid I'm going to forget the words to it.
Here we go.
Weird. All right, Inez, could we have a roll call, please?
Thank you, Chair. I'll take the roll call and call Chair Hartwig.
I'm present.
And we have Commissioner Castillo.
Present.
Commissioner Montgomery. Commissioner Montgomery.
Oh, here. I'm reading.
Commissioner Wright.
Here.
And Commissioner Jung Lee.
She is excused.
Okay, thank you. And Commissioner Tortorich.
I'm pleased to be here.
Thank you.
Okay.
What about Ms. Sandberg?
I'm sorry, she moved away from me. I got confused. Commissioner Griffith.
Present.
Thank you.
Okay. Do we have a motion to approve last month's minutes?
So moved.
Seconded. All those in favor? Aye.
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 Any opposed? Any abstentions? Probably people that weren't here for last meeting would be...
Should abstain.
Should abstain, yes. 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 That would be recommended since you weren't here. Okay, so it carries. Old or unfinished business?
There is none.
We have none. Does anyone have any modifications to the agenda? Hearing none, moving on to item six, new business, item A.
Item A is a nomination election of vice chair to the Oakland Housing Authority Board of Commissioners for a term ending June 30th, 2020, replacing the seat previously held by Marlene Hurd.
To the chair, I'd love to make a nomination at this time to have Commissioner Ann Griffith move in as vice chair if she so wishes.
I accept.
Oh, okay.
We have to second first or something.
Okay. Any other nominations or comments or whatever? Okay, all those, excuse me, all those in favor of Commissioner Griffith as our vice chair, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposition? Any abstentions? You are unanimously elected the vice chair.
Thank you, commissioners. Moving on to item B. Nomination election of a director to the Tassafaronga Housing Corporation. This is a housing corporation nonprofit board that oversees our development in East Oakland.
I'd like to nominate Jamie for that position.
Thank you.
Cool.
I accept the nomination.
All right. Do we have a second?
I'd like to second that.
Beautiful. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Any abstentions? You are unanimously confirmed as one of the directors of Tassafaronga.
Tassafaronga.
Okay. Let's see. Now we're going on to item
C.
C.
Nomination election of one director to the Oakland Housing Authority Preservation Initiatives Board of Directors for a term ending June 30th, 2020, replacing the seat previously held by Donna Grace Murphy.
For the OP.
This is the OP board replacement.
Yeah. Yes, if you want to nominate
him. I would like to nominate Mark.
Oh.
I must accept, I think.
Then I'll second that.
This is a conspiracy to leverage your real estate experience, which you will find you will need in this. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Any abstentions? Okay, Mark, welcome, and you are now officially on two boards. How's that for your first night?
Not too bad.
Okay, so now we are, let's see, oh, we need one more, right?
No.
No, oh, we're good.
Just the one, yeah, that was a typo.
Okay, so now we're going to D?
We're going to D, consideration of a resolution authorizing an amendment to resolution number 4848, which authorized the disposition and financing of the rehabilitation of Oak Grove North and Oak Grove South through the lease, whoops, you cut me off. Yes, through the lease of Oak Grove South, through the lease and the sale of improvements to Oak Grove's senior housing LP and related financing documents to approve an updated permanent loan amount and a ground lease loan. And I would like to introduce those of you who don't know to Dave Cadu, who's our heads our Office of Real Estate Development, who has put together a kind of amazing package to take two former public housing sites, move them into the project-based Section 8 program, and finance a complete rehabilitation of them without using any real housing authority dollars.
Thank you very much. Dave Cadu, Senior Director of Real Estate Development. As noted in the resolution title, this action that we are bringing to you today proposes the amendment of Resolution 4848, which originally authorized several actions by this, excuse me, by the agency on behalf of Oak Groves so that we can execute the rehabilitation that Executive Director Johnson described a moment ago. There are two major changes to this resolution that we would like to propose tonight. The first is to increase the amount of our permanent private debt that we are taking out on this deal from $20 million to an amount not to exceed $26 million. Primary reason for that is that we have encountered several environmental issues at the site that have caused us to undertake significant remediation or mitigation measures. Those include VOC vapors under the building slab, lead-impacted soils, petroleum-impacted soil under the parking garages, and contaminated groundwater, though it is unclear at this point whether or not we are a contributing factor to that issue. Most of these issues are related to prior use of the site as gas stations. I believe both sites were gas stations prior to becoming Oak Groves North and South at various times. Additionally, in the neighborhood, there are many uses that create pollution, including a blueprint factory, a former dry cleaner, and a number of other light industrial uses around that area. So these mitigation costs are currently slated to be approximately $3 million. Depending on the timing of when we close the deal and when we can get our approvals from the County Department of Environmental Health, we may have cost overruns because as we wait, the contractors are hitting us with escalation on labor and to a greater extent materials due to the tariffs that have been imposed on a lot of the products that we use in the construction process. Our current request is for $26 million. That is a not-to-exceed amount. We are currently projecting our permanent loan to actually be closer to $23 million. However, if interest rates remain low, we may be able to borrow more and facilitate more work. The second item that is included in this resolution is a recharacterization of the ground lease payments at the site. Originally, we had anticipated a $343,000 capitalized ground lease payment, which would have been paid to the Housing Authority and then reimbursed to the partnership as part of a larger seller carryback loan for the entire value of the property, no cash actually exchanging hands. Because of tax reasons, we have had to separate that seller carryback loan into three separate pieces, one of which is a ground lease loan. So basically, the appraised value of the property that these buildings sit upon will be $343,000. The partnership will pay the Housing Authority $99 upfront in cash, and the balance will go back in a seller loan characterized to hit the ground lease in an amount of $342,901. So it's the same setup. We're just slightly recharacterizing how that money gets chopped up and you know moved from the seller to the partnership and back to the seller. I am happy to take any questions at this time.
No, that's the next item.
Questions? Okay, I have one.
Sure.
this is actually, believe it or not, not the first time we have experienced ground contamination in projects here. Right. So my question is always, is this can sometimes go very badly. So my question is what is our confidence level here in our understanding of what we're really up against?
Sure. So over the past several months, and I think the process really started back in January, to let you know how long we've been working on this, we have done extensive evaluation of the site. It includes taking vapor samples under the slab. We've taken groundwater samples and run up a consulting bill close to $500,000 trying to figure out what's actually going on. At the moment, I think we feel very confident that we have captured the full slate of potential issues at the site. Frankly, I'm trying to think of what other issues we could possibly encounter, and none come to mind. So from that point alone, we're pretty good. But honestly, you know, we've done extensive testing for basically every potential environmental contaminant at site over a fairly long period of time. We've verified that there's no present and immediate danger to the residents. It's kind of our first and foremost challenge. But we've had extensive conversations with the Alameda County Department of Environmental Health, and they have set basically charted a course for us to be able to remediate these issues and get closure on the case prior to converting to permanent financing. So, we've got a very good handle on it. Even if we don't, we're currently carrying a substantial contingency, at least 20% based on the environmental costs we've identified to date. Plus, we've got our standard, industry standard construction contingency on top of that. So I feel pretty comfortable saying that we've identified the scope of the issues. Never say never, but, yes. From my mind, we are very, very far along.
The other big point to make is that we're not touching the soil. We're not removing the concrete slab.
We're not?
That's a parking. No. No, we're only doing unit improvements up above.
Well,
this is all stuff that they found existing when we went through the environmental review. But so we're not touching it.
Oh, we're not?
No.
Well, oh,
we're not,
okay.
It's
so
not going to be like next door where
okay,
I'm
so
sending
concluded,
Chevron or invoices.
We concluded then that the residents in the building, everyone is safe.
Yeah.
Right? Even though there's no way you could build on this piece of land right now, right?
Basically, yes. I would like to correct something. We are doing some work at our courtyards that will cause us to disturb the soil. But we're excavating, off-hauling, and capping that to make sure that nobody contacts any soil that's been impacted by lead once we do our work. So, it's landscaping, basically. But just because we're touching the dirt, we have to dispose of it properly. But it's not like Harrison Tower where we literally have to take the entire site, excavate several feet off of it.
Right.
And,
That's where
and
my...
And it's not the Harrison Senior next door that was the Chevron and we had the tank and we had
right.
to go down
and
an extra 4 feet.
Right, and we had the leaking stuff coming in, remember? And it was really bad.
Yeah.
Okay, very good.
And further to that, we actually have identified the former owner of the gas station, and we are hoping that we can draw a line and make them the responsible party if something happens with our groundwater issue. So it's Texaco, now a subsidiary of Chevron. I've heard they have deep pockets, so hopefully we'll be okay there.
Well, it is a major oil company, so
yeah.
Okay, well, proceed wisely.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Sure.
So do we have any more questions or a motion?
I'll move a motion that we move the aye.
Second.
All those in favor, aye.
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 Opposed? Abstentions? It carries unanimously. Okay. So we now move on to Item E,
consideration of resolution authorizing the executive director to enter into an acquisition condition agreement allowing the allocation of up to $12 million for development of the project located at 285 12th Street, including the purchase of the property and loan of funds in the project, ground lease and interim lease of the property, participation in the project through the OHA Development LLC, and the contribution of up to $1 million in pre-development financing for the project, and award up to 25 units of project-based voucher assistance. This is, I think, a very exciting project, and I will turn it over to Dave, who's prepared a presentation for you to walk you through it. And I know we have some Ebalsee representatives here, one Enner, who's going to speak, I think, on the item as well. Go ahead.
Great.
Yes, we actually have a speaker card now. So would this be better to have this person talk before or after?
I think it would probably be better to have it follow the presentation.
Follow the presentation.
Yeah,
okay.
I think that's
then we will do exactly that.
Great. Thank you.
Yes.
Okay, well, thank you. Again, Dave Cadu, Senior Director of Real Estate Development. You have a presentation in front of you outlining a proposal to purchase a parcel of land at 285 12th Street. That piece of property is currently a vacant lot. I believe it was a hardscaped area for a school that is no longer there. Currently, it's being used for staging for one of the nearby high-rise developments. What has been proposed there is a seven-story building, which is five stories of wood framing over a two-story concrete podium, much like you see many of the buildings in this neighborhood being built. It would house 65 units of affordable housing and approximately 3,500 square feet of commercial space. At this time, I do not believe a commercial tenant has been identified. It is, as Director Johnson mentioned, an excellent location. It is less than half a mile from both the 12th Street and Lake Merritt BART stations, with multiple surface mass transit options available as well. It's one block from Lincoln Square Park, and is generally located in a very good location in the downtown Oakland core area, which, as you all know, is changing very rapidly at this time. If this is approved, we are projecting a closing in late 2020 with occupancy by the beginning of 2022. The proposed unit mix includes studios up to three bedroom units. It is a family building, but there's at least 10% special needs units that will be required as conditions of other funding sources that are going to be used. Most likely that's going to be for homeless individuals, but that has not yet been determined. The proposed income mix would range from 20% to 60% of AMI, and we would allocate up to 25 project-based vouchers for the deal. So we've got a few renderings for you here. This is the main entrance as proposed. You can see the two-story concrete facade with the a little peak of the wood blocks, the wood-framed building above it. And this is the same view pulled back slightly to give you a better idea of what this looks like. It would be very similar to what we partnered with Abaldsi on over at 11th and Jackson, which is now called Prosperity Place. This is a view of the building from further on. You can see the new proposed building off to the right of the picture in the distance. It's within the context of the neighborhood, and in fact, given other construction around, is actually probably going to be dwarfed by a building that is very nearby, but definitely fits in with the context of the urban core. Again, here's another picture from an alternative entry vantage point. You can again see the sort of two-story entry concept and the potential retail below. This is a location of the map. The proposed development is centered on the map. To the left of this area, you would walk to the 12th Street BART station. To the right, you would walk to Lake Merritt. And you can see Lincoln Square Park just across 11th Street behind the building. In terms of scale, you can see the seven-story, roughly 85-foot building in context here next to trees in the streetscape and adjacent buildings. And here is an alternative view from the Webster facade. So in terms of the funding sources for this development, we would be looking at a 4% tax-exempt bond and tax credit deal with additional soft funding from the state HCD multifamily housing program. MHP is a competitively awarded source of funds. We are anticipating that an application will go out this summer. There will be another round following early next year, we believe. The inclusion of project-based vouchers will increase operating income, which in turn will allow us to leverage greater private debt for the development. So it's a good example of how a deal can use project-based vouchers not only to impact residents and give them an affordable rent, but also to provide development capital moving forward. And in our current projections, we are showing that approximately $300,000 per PBV can be leveraged from the permanent loan. So there's a request here to include funds from the authority in lieu of an award from the city to facilitate a quicker development timeline. We don't have anything final on the city's NOFA process right now, but what we have heard and what we believe will be the case is the upcoming NOFA round in fall of 2019 will basically not include any funding or very little funding for new construction. So it's unlikely that a project entering the NOFA at this time as a new construction deal will be funded as they take care of those that have already entered previous NOFAs and are in the queue. As noted before, we're anticipating an MHP application in August. There's a current NOFA out on the street. There will be another round in a few more months if the current application is unsuccessful. We do believe that this is a very strong application. There may be issues with readiness that prevent it from being funded in August, but once we get the NEPA clearance, we feel very good about this project's chances to get funded. So, under the current resolution, the authority is authorized to do the following. Number one, purchase the property for an amount not to exceed its current appraised value, which is estimated at $6.5 million. Number two, provide an additional loan to the tax credit partnership not to exceed $12 million less the purchase price of the property. So that would mean a total outlay of $12 million. In the event that the property appraises at the expected $6.5 million, the additional loan would be $5.5 million. Enter into a long-term ground lease with the tax credit partnership, allowing for the land to be used by the project. The ground lease would have a form similar to many of the other partnership deals we have done in the past, with a nominal ground lease amount on an annual basis. Number four, enter into an interim lease with a Baldsey in the event that the property is purchased prior to the construction closing. So a Baldsey has already purchased this property and they would be selling it to us. The agency might see it in its best interest to acquire the property before the construction closing occurs. Carrying costs are currently being accumulated, and ultimately those will be partnership costs. So the sooner we take out that loan, or sooner Abaldi is allowed to take out that loan, the less we will wind up paying out of our own pocket and gap funding to try and carry that acquisition funding. So it's a pretty good use of our money, I believe, to, you know, advance those funds now. But that means we have to figure out what to do with the property in the interim. And our plan is to lease it back early to the current owner to, you know, kind of relieve ourselves of the obligation to manage the property and various other liability issues that are associated with it. Number five, provide a pre-development loan in Abaldsey to Abaldsey in an amount not to exceed $1 million. This would be part of the $12 million that is being allocated. Again, to the extent that these funds are not provided by the agency or the authority, these funds would need to be borrowed in the private market. Acquisition and pre-development loans tend to carry very high interest rates. So again, as a cost-saving measure, if we have the money to put forth, it's generally a good idea to use our own to avoid paying interest to a bank or one of the nonprofit lenders. And number six, it would allow us to enter into any partnership documents required to facilitate the agency's participation in developing the project. That is a very generic statement, but generally speaking, it is something we need to ask for in these resolutions so that we can enter into documents such as an acquisition conditions agreement or other documents that facilitate the purchase and sale and also facilitate the application for financing and ultimately the closing of various loans. Number seven, we would enter into an administrative fee agreement allowing the agency to receive approximately 40% to 50% of the project developer fee. Again, this is consistent with other projects of this type that we have done, most notably 11th and Jackson or Prosperity Place is our latest example with the Baldsey. The arrangement would be quite similar to that. Number eight, enter into a purchase option and right of first refusal agreement to allow the agency the right to buy out the tax credit investor at year 15. This would give us the option at year 15 to take the investor's interest and bring it into the Housing Authority's portfolio. Again, this is a major deal point that we see in most of the partnership deals we do, and it effectively gives us the security that this property will be maintained as affordable housing over the long term, because if we own it, it will be affordable. And finally, number nine, enter into any other documents required to facilitate the agency's participation in the project. Again, this is a catch-all. It typically shows up in the resolutions of this sort that we present to this board. So I believe that is it, and I would, before we have a Baldzi come up, I don't know if you've got specific questions for me, feel free to let me know.
You have a question?
Yes. So I'm just curious, do we, there's an estimate of development cost. When do we expect maybe a shovel to ground?
Depending on when the funding is obtained from the state of California under the MHP NOFA, I think we're looking at late 2020. So we may be able to accelerate that timeline if they're successful in the August NOFA. If we are not, I would expect it to be awarded in the early 2020 NOFA with closing to, you know, follow several months after.
So a little bit of escalation, inflation risk between now and then.
Yes, and I believe in the projections I've seen that's been priced in.
Okay. How many of the 2- and 3-bedroom units will be adaptable for those who have handicapped physical needs?
Yeah, I'd like to call up the Baldzi team to answer that question if I can. They are much more involved in the design process.
Hi, good evening. I'm Enner Chu with the East Bay Asian Local Development Corporation. I'm the Associate Director of Real Estate Development there. And to answer Commissioner Wright's question, our entire building will be designed to universal design. That means all of the units will be adaptable. And then we're mandated by federal regs to have hold at least 5% of the units to be built out from the very start as visual and auditory and physically handicapped accessible. But we have a really long history in Baldzi of working with a very, very diverse pool of tenants and applicants. And so we honor almost all of the requests to adapt the units as we lease them out.
Yes, my question is that with the inclusion of the PP project-based vouchers, and also I see where there's going to be at least 7 units set aside for homeless, are they included in the vouchers, the project-based vouchers?
That's a good question, and currently I don't think that's been determined yet. You know, it would be my assumption that if there are homeless individuals at the site, that they would receive some sort of rental subsidy. It's a very difficult population to serve absent, you know, a steady rental subsidy. One thing we've discussed, you know, with respect to those 7 units is potentially accessing alternative subsidies through the continuum of care, which would free up the project-based vouchers for other residents. But at this time, we are not that far along in the process to have identified the population or the method of subsidizing those units.
But it's a great question. One of the things that we had been talking about is if we were to designate these for our sponsor-based program that would be sponsored through the city and abode, that they would come with services, and that would be in addition to the project-based vouchers because they have trouble finding those units. And so locking down some hard units for that program, the people who move in have wraparound services from the city, I think is a really good idea. So we'll be talking to the city about doing that. And again, that would be in addition to this project-based award because that would be an agreement with abode as a sponsor to sponsor mm-hmm. the units.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Because, you know, we don't just, I mean, just use that as, you know, selling the, you know, we want to make sure that, you know, this that they are inclusive and where they fit in, you know. So
absolutely.
We're following up on that to make sure. Okay.
Absolutely. Thank you.
I have a procedural question about those PBVs. They're part, we're including that as an award because we're acquiring the property.
I'm just yes, yeah, whenever we enter a deal, we can award ourselves the vouchers for the okay. project and do the lending. Yeah.
Okay.
It's one of our MTW flexibilities. Okay.
Yeah. Great. Thank you.
To the chair. Yes. Thank you very much. Concerning the City of Oakland funds that we're leaving on the table, I know the timeline, it would be stretched years, or at least 1 year. But how much money are we leaving on the table?
What was your proposed gap from the City of Oakland?
It's probably around probably around $4 million or so, $4 to $5 million.
Right, and so it's not just a takeout with respect to timing, but you know, if we push out the development timeline for a significant amount of time, you know, anecdotally we've been hearing that there's construction inflation happening of approximately 1% a month. So, you know, every year that's 10 to 15% that gets added onto the costs. And if you wait that year, I mean, that could eat most of that $4 million alone.
Exactly. So. Okay, I was just wanted to clarify that.
Sure.
The other question I have, I believe, for Balsi is, what does 60% AMI look like now?
We get asked that question a lot. The current 100% AMI figure for a household of four people in Alameda County is about $104,000 a year. So 60% of that is obviously about $60,000 to $61,000 a year.
That's for four people, though.
That's for four people. That's correct.
Two at the most, if not one.
Well, actually, so we've designed this building to really serve large families as much as possible. So actually, 50% of all of the units in the building. So at 65 units, at least 33 of the units will be for two bedroom and three bedroom households. It's one of the really important things, I think, that Ibaltzi has really held fast to in all of our family developments, is that we really want to see families be a part of downtown.
So that's 60 then. Mm-hmm. Okay. What I'm going to say is, can we do more than required for our unhoused population? Seven units seems so minimal. And I hear that there's talk of how we could do better, but it would be nice to really think about that in a more realistic way, because seven units is just not really adequate.
Yes, and other of our projects and deals, which we may get an opportunity to talk to you about in the future, mm-hmm. we're doing 50% of our units as homeless housing. So we have another deal down just at the edge of downtown in West Oakland, where we're doing 59 units of mm-hmm. housing, and that is really split half between families and half for a chronic homeless population. So 30 of those units will be for homeless folks.
Oh, I'm very glad to hear that. Yeah. Thank you. My last comment is concerning free internet for the residents. This is a really good time to think about that. Mm-hmm. And I'd like for you to consider that and what that would look like. It would really be beneficial to low-income residents to get free access to internet.
Yeah, thank you for that comment. We're actually looking at that across our entire portfolio. So I think we have a couple of grant applications in to do that across the entire portfolio, and if that happens, then this building will be included in that.
Thank you.
But regardless of whether that happens, that can be something that we look into building into the operating expense budget of the building.
Thank you, and it's good to see you.
Nice to see you.
I realize I had one more question.
Yes. And
I'm just curious how, on the included budget, how the additional gap OHA line relates to the other dollar amounts that we've talked about.
Sorry, what was the number?
There's a little over $11 million in additional gap OHA that's highlighted in red in the budget, and I'm just curious how that line relates to the other things that we're being asked to.
Yeah. So I think that's the total current projected gap financing from the agency that's required that relates to the $12 million not to exceed amount. So if you total the land loan plus the additional loan, we're checking in at just under $12 million.
Okay.
And that line simply totals those amounts. So there is no additional $11 million gap. That's just the current request.
Cool. Any further questions? So I have a question for you, Emmer. Did this satisfy your speaker card?
Well, I had a story with some color to tell, but
you're welcome to your 3 minutes, is what he just said.
Well, if it's with the chair's permission, I guess I will take the 3 minutes now, if that's okay.
Yeah, sure.
Well, I just want to say it's very nice to be in front of the board again and seeing some of the, meeting some of the new commissioners. My name, once again, is Enner Chu. I'm Associate Director of Real Estate Development at Abaltzi, and I've been there for about 15 years or so. And in the audience is Capri Roth, our Senior Project Manager, who has really been on this project since we acquired it. We've really been pleased to work with OHA staff, both Dave and Eric, over the last couple of months to present and kind of fine-tune the deal points that we think really make this a win-win project for both organizations. And the project, as you know, sits in Oakland Chinatown and in the downtown area, which is really the home to Abaltzi and also to OHA. And if you walk around downtown these days, you'll see just how quickly downtown is changing. Last 2 months, I think I walked around and counted 17 construction cranes. And between 2018 and 2020, those cranes will deliver 5,000 new apartments to downtown Oakland. And unfortunately, over 96% of that production is market rate. So people ask me a lot, like, what does 60% AMI mean? They also ask me what market rate means. And what we've seen is that rents are approaching about $5 a square foot. So for a typical 1,000 square foot two bedroom, a new market rate developer, a new construction is looking to rent that at about $5,000 a month.
Oh my God. So
that 5,000 units that we see, only 4% of that is currently BMR. Below market rate. And so in contrast, what we're looking at renting these units for at this project is somewhere around $1,600 a month. So you can really see and appreciate the difference between the populations that we're serving and the populations the market rate development is serving. So Abaltzi has been really engaged in community and downtown advocacy and planning issues over the last 10 plus years. And this property actually came about through a community benefits negotiation. We participated in a community coalition called the Oakland Chinatown Coalition, which really negotiated with the for-profit developer that was purchasing the parcel of land that Dave was showing on the earlier presentation, as well as the full block parcel next door. And they had originally wanted to build about 333 total units. And this little parcel that we're talking about was going to be home to 77 studios and one bedroom kind of market rate units. So what we managed to do is to negotiate with the developer and really force them to the table and say, hey, we want to be part of this transaction. If you want our assistance in getting through the city council and entitlements process, we're going to build affordable housing on this part of the development. And so we really forced ourselves into this conversation. But what we had to do is then purchase the land at a market rate, which is why we're so glad to partner, as I wrap up, which is why we're so glad to partner with OHA to help really bring these affordable family apartments to downtown Oakland. We're just such a small drop in the bucket, but we're such an important drop to be able to stabilize downtown for low-income and working-class families in downtown Oakland. So thank you so much for partnering with us, and we really appreciate it.
Thank you. Well, I have one question that I kind of like always have. It seems it just keeps popping up in my mind, because just, you know, hearing about, you know, there's 5,000 market rate units coming in, and then we have a small number of affordable units here. And my question really is having this land, why can't we leverage it even more by building more, by going up? Is that pretty much I mean, I'm assuming it's a cost restrictive thing, but
it is.
But I am curious.
It is. And maybe actually sometime we can kind of do an item and delve deeper into, because I agree with you. And I push I have, even at 11th and Jackson, mm-hmm. I was pushing to make it twice as tall.
Yes. Okay,
it just
good.
Doesn't work.
So we're all
financially.
On the
same
page.
So yeah. We know what works. There's a sweet spot in any pro forma about the size, density, and number of units. And some of that is the large bedroom size versus studio or one bedrooms. But you hit a place where it works. And what this development is really almost a kind of cookie cutter size that works in my mind. And I would turn over to Dave and sure. And if you guys want to add to that.
Yeah, I mean,
basically what Director Johnson said. But, there's a couple of major considerations, the first being the construction type. So five stories of wood over two stories of concrete is about as far as you can push it without going into a more expensive mid-rise type development. And then there are considerations with respect to the funding programs that we use. And, you know, the per project awards are limited and so on and so forth, meaning that it's really difficult to do big, you know, really big one phase projects.
I see. So we don't have the access to financing that a commercial project would have, the breadth of types
Correct.
Of financing.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Right. I don't know if you have anything to add specific to this project, but.
We'll take 20 million and do two more units. But short of what Director Johnson and Dave said, that's completely spot on.
All right, good. Well, thank you. Thank you for another fine presentation. You know, we just have to let people know that we are ready to do more, bigger, better, if it's possible to do that.
Thank you.
So we have a vote on another resolution. So is there a motion?
I'd like to move the item.
I'd like to second.
Second.
It has been moved. It has been seconded. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Any abstentions? There are none. Unanimous.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, David.
Exciting project.
Appreciate it. And so now we're going to F.
F, consideration of a resolution authorizing the executive director to continue the Housing Authority's participation in the Employment Risk Management Agency, also known as IRMA, insurance pool, and to issue payment of the annual premium invoice in amount of $189,242. This item is a routine annual item that comes before us. We participate in a risk management group related to any human resources issues. This change. There are two points that I want to make about this one this year. One is it is going up $24,000 from the previous year, and that's based on the overall pool that we're in, which involves agencies from throughout the state. But I also want to point out that we did receive, we will receive next month a dividend release because we have an 80% confidence level for a period of 2010 and 11 and 2013-14 in amount of $52,000. So we actually are going to make $52,000 returning because we are low risk and we have very few claims. But the overall pool went up an additional 24. Artesia is out of town today, so I'm providing the report, and will do my best to struggle through answering any questions.
Excellent. Any questions?
I'll move the item, Chair.
Okay. Moved, seconded. All those in favor, aye.
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 Opposed, abstentions, carries unanimously. And now we are going to item G, our report.
Yeah, report and update of the Board of Commissioners Recruitment Ad Hoc Committee on the recruitment and selection of the new executive director and related discussions.
All right. So you want me to? Okay. Okay. So, I'm really pleased to say that we are rolling forward here. And we have, I think that last time we mentioned that we had selected our executive search firm, Gans and Gans, that are located in Florida. And we now have a posting for the position that is up. So we are now live. And we have a one-month window now. This is kind of an obligatory sort of thing. So we give people 1 month to respond. And then once we have responses, the process is going to shake down as Gans and Gans are going to make some recommendations regarding culling the suite of applicants, or in other words, reducing the applicant pool. Then the committee will take a step at this to try to call it even further. The goal here would be to have this down to two to at most three candidates that we will bring in for the entire board to interview. Importantly, Our entire commission is going to be interviewing all of the finalist candidates, and this is we are the group of people that make the decision on who to hire. We've also talked with a couple of other people to help us in the interviewing process, and most of us are not in the business of hiring CEOs all that frequently. So we're looking for maybe a couple other people to come in and help us ask some questions and just bring a little bit of new blood in so we can get a more more of a discussion going, and in the event that we might not observe some things or miss something, we'll have some other folks to kind of help us out with that. So that is, in a nutshell, where we're going. We even have a schedule that I believe everyone has a copy of somewhere, where we're going to be, we're blocking out some time in the month of September. Yes, there it is, right there.
It is. It's on your desk, and we'll also email out a electronic poll that you can complete.
Yes.
So you don't need to fill this out.
We're going to do a doodle poll on this so we can get everybody.
But if you want to fill that out and let us know, that works as well.
Right, right. So the way this is going to work is just a little bit more detail on this. The committee will do some short video interviews with people as part of our culling process to reduce the field. Now, if people are local, we may interview them in person. If it's not a travel issue, then when we get to the full board, we're going to have that structured as right now. Tentatively, we're thinking 3 hours of interviewing per candidate. So that would be 3 hours for the entire board, along with any other people we have helping us to interview each candidate. And we have also discussed possibly having a group of residents and stakeholders in the community interact with the finalist individuals. So the commission role in this would be to do absolutely nothing other than observe. We would observe, which is actually doing a lot, because it really matters how a new executive director is going to interact with our residents, with people in the community, and all of that. And it gives us a chance to not be asking questions and just sit back and watch. There's also a lot of value in that. So I think, I hope I have covered.
You did very good.
Oh, I did. Thank you very much. So if anyone has any questions, please ask them. And we, a good question is if people, and this is for Jennifer. So Jennifer, if people have some questions that aren't on the committee, and they want to ask them, how do we work that? Do we send them through Eric or something so that we don't end up with a Brown Act violation?
When the committee is interviewing
people? No, just if people have other people on the commission ask them questions and they're like, hey, committee, we want you to know what we're thinking, or we have an opinion, or we just want to supply some information or ask a question. Yeah. Yeah, okay. So okay. Just to say that if anybody's burning with something and you feel like there's a Brown Act violation waiting to happen, you can send information or questions to Eric and we'll figure out.
Okay. Yeah.
We'll figure out how to work it. But remember, we're going to be meeting once a month, okay? So we're going to have times when we're together that we can talk like this right now. So if you have any questions you want to ask now, any concerns, anything, we're here.
So
this is the position description that's on our desk.
Yes, sir.
That's the brochure, yeah.
Yes.
So we're going to interview the entire month of September, is that?
Well, yeah, not the entire month, but we have certain days. Slated out.
And so we are looking at having a director in place. Do you have a time limit?
Oh, yeah. Eric wants to be gone in October.
Oh, okay.
So we're under a short fuse here. This is the definition of stress.
The dates that we're asking to hold are 6 dates in September over 2 weeks. We won't use them all clearly. We just want to see if people are available right. So we can hold one or two. So the point is to get the majority of, if not everyone, kind of one of those dates. So if you can get that back to us, it'll help the committee know, and we can let the recruiter know that these are the dates we're going to move forward with.
Okay. And our chair is also considering what would happen if we, for some reason, couldn't make that deadline. So we do have contingencies. But in all sincerity, I think we have a really good chance of making it happen.
We are firing on all cylinders, I am very pleased to say. And so I think, a lot can happen. This is a big deal. This is a big job that we're trying to fill here. And but I want everybody to know that we are really putting attention to this. I mean, this is our number one priority. This is what really matters. And we are putting a whole lot of extra time into this that we don't put into virtually anything else. I mean, because we're not really employed by anyone to do this, but we have to do it. We have to do it. And so we're actually happy to do it. All right, good. Then that is it. And like I say, any questions that pop up, just feel free to shoot them out. So now we're going to move on to item H, which I think we've already addressed that.
There are no speakers.
Right. So now we are going into the final part.
Written communications.
Mm-hmm.
In your packet, you have the usual monthly report. I again want to just thank staff for what I think is probably the most comprehensive monthly report I've seen from any housing authority, I just want to say. And the numbers continue to amaze me when I read them. And I do read it all every month. Behind that, you have other written items I just want to cover. Some of them, as you know, who've been on the board for a long time, I put just so they're public record. One is the approval of our plan. So we've been approved from HUD for our 2020 plan. I'm grateful for that. And thank you, Dominica, for getting that and handling it. I did also a briefing memo on a fire we had at 1733 92nd Avenue. It was on the 4th of July in the morning. It was an alleged arson, is what I can say, I think. So it was very upsetting because it displaced 4 people in the 4th of July. And we had staff working from 6 a.m. through the day. And I want to thank Mark particularly and OHAPD particularly for really rising to the occasion, making sure those families were relocated and had a safe place to stay by the afternoon. They're now in the process of restoring and moving back, and we found the place where the fire was is actually moving into a unit in Peralta. So I'm happy that we handled it so well, and I just am grateful for the staff who devoted their 4th of July to helping our families and wanted you aware. The next one is actually the MTW statute requirements provisional compliance assessment from HUD. This is a requirement based on an OMB finding against HUD. So they've found that we are substantially compliant for 2014, 15, 16, and 17, and with a caveat that they're not done with 18 and 19, but they still think we're compliant. So it's a compliance letter. I'm grateful to put it in the record because we are substantially compliant. We go above and beyond, I think, what the contract requires and other housing authorities do in the MTW program. The next letter is July 9th, and this was at the request of actually the last meeting. People wanted to know what we were commenting on related to some of HUD's crazy proposed rules, and this one is one of the most appalling. Not only does it, what it's trying to do is force anyone who is not here, a family member who is not here legally, out of a unit. It doesn't make any sense in terms of if you really have any strong family values to start with. The other thing, it costs this agency more because if you take that person who's prorated out of the rent anyway, we will pay more HAP for the family when that person moves out. It also requires us to verify eligibility, including their legal status, for all of our participants, which seems onerous and ridiculous. So I'm hoping that the groups who have written will be so overwhelming that they don't move forward. But I did include our comments. They were drafted again by Planning Implementation and Compliance, Dominica Henderson, who can probably talk more about it than I ever could if you have any questions. What I would tell you about it, the letter, is that when we rolled the numbers up, we found it was like 54 individuals in Oakland. And so we don't have a good, strong case to say it impacts so many folks, but it's somewhere in the neighborhood of 11,000 in Los Angeles County. So the let's not let them off the hook.
Yes.
This is bad policy. It's intentionally vindictive. It's very much racially overtoned, and it just needs to stop.
Good.
So anything else you want to? Okay.
I have two questions.
Yes.
Thank you for two questions. Thank you, Director. You're absolutely correct. Just concerning the date for the 2012 OP wait list, do we have a tentative date when we're going to open up those wait lists? Ms. Michelle?
I'll ask Michelle Hassan, who's Director of Leased Housing, to come up and talk about opening our wait list. It is, I think, such an important thing while she's getting up, because I really believe if we're able to open our Housing Choice Voucher wait list, we will have a huge dent in the number of unsheltered people applying, and we can actually start working on getting them housing. And I think it's also really important, and I say this so that you can carry this message forward,
please,
that people in the continuum of care, people working in the homeless fields, getting funded from the city, one of the priorities of the city should be, when we open our wait list, to have assistance for the application, have assistance for credit checks, have assistance for security deposit, to help those individuals succeed in leasing up a unit.
Absolutely. I will pass along that message, Director. Yes.
Good evening, Commissioners. Michelle Hassan, Director of Leased Housing. Commissioner Castillo, our plan for the HCV wait list is late 2019, early 2020. One of the reasons we are putting that back in the year is because, as you will see in the monthly report, we're actively pulling families off that list and getting them in so that they can get vouchers and get on the street. We've had a really high success rate because we did purge the list. And so we've had like a 50% response,
oh, wonderful,
which is very positive. So it is critical that we do open the list early 2020 because we do need to also lease the 28 mainstream vouchers that we were awarded.
That was my next question.
Oh, so
thank
that's
you.
Part of that process.
Tell me more about that because I'm not connecting the dot.
So what HUD said is that we got 28 of those mainstream vouchers, that they had to come from your HCV list. You couldn't open a separate wait list just for those families. So what will happen is when we open that HCV wait list, we will include those preferences that have to do with families coming out of institutions, getting, you know, coming directly from those nonprofit community areas. And we partnered with East Bay Innovations and the Alameda County Health Services Department. So they helped us on the NOFA, and they will then be able to refer families, as will other people in the community, for those 28 vouchers.
So it's not 78 vouchers,
it's 28 for the mainstream, 27, 2017 NOFA.
Okay, so how does the 50 more come in?
50 more?
Because mainstream says we're, if I'm correct, what just say is like we're adding, requesting 50 vouchers.
We requested 50, we're only awarded 20.
We were 20. Awarded 28.
We were shorted by HUD.
So we only got 28 of the 50 that we requested?
Yes. I know.
No rhyme or reason, so.
All right.
We just
Thank
didn't
you.
Want you to think we only requested 24, so
Don't
we put it in the board report.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
And 50 was the maximum you could request.
Try again next year. Mm-hmm.
And that the last thing in the written materials you'll see is actually the calendar. It has the proposed board meetings. Additionally, there'll be other ones related to the interview and any special meetings that they'd want to call. I also just want to point out the remaining travel, particularly the National Association of Housing and Redevelopment Officials, NARO, is having their national convention in San Antonio October 10th through the 12th. We are up for two national awards of excellence. It's rare when an agency even gets nominated for one, and we've been nominated for two now, I think, three different times. What makes this year particularly significant for me personally is we haven't ever gotten one for a non-development project. We've gotten a bunch of them for development projects over the years, but for administrative innovations, we really haven't, and these are both for administrative innovations. So it's stuff we have done just administratively that I think warrants national attention. So I want to congratulate the folks who put together the owner incentives program and also the anti-bullying program with OHAPD, because I think they're both innovations that could be replicated and really make a difference, and I hope we win. But do think about attending those if you'd like.
Very cool. Yeah, I just thought that I would throw something in there to follow up on something Eric mentioned at the beginning of his written communications about the data that is contained in here regarding the performance of the entire housing authority. And so for our two new commissioners, I strongly recommend that you read through this stuff, because it's really pretty cool, first of all, that we track this data. But it's not just that we track the data, but you can see that it's all very effectively compartmentalized. Like, for example, you have all of the relevant pieces of information that you would ever want to have to evaluate any real estate business in general. I mean, you can see how many work orders are being filed. You can see, you can see what the rate of collections are on rents, et cetera, et cetera. And then we also have all of the family and community partnerships, because OHA has become, thankfully, much, much more than a low-income housing business. So we do a lot more for people than just keeping the rain off of them. I mean, we're actually doing things to make their lives better. And I think that what you'll find in here can give you a very nice little overview of that. And any questions that pop up there, everyone on this commission and the staff here is all here to help everybody understand and get on board as quick as possible. So you just ask questions and whatever, and there we go.
Chairman, I would just like to say that in receiving my packet on Thursday, of course I was excited, and I went through it piece by piece, but I gave compliment to Mrs. Wheeler today. I work over at 935 Union, and as often as I'm there day by day, and as much as I believed that I knew, when I read her report, I was like, this is FCP? There was so much going on that I wasn't aware of, and I want to publicly say congratulations to Mrs. Lenita Wheeler, Director of FCP, and her staff. For those of you that don't have a packet, try to get a copy. You need to know that FCP is on the map globally. We are better than Donald Trump could ever be, thanks to the staff of FCP. It's phenomenal to know how much work they are doing and have done and are going to improve upon to give more to the community. It is a phenomenal report, and you need to know more about your family and community partner division. It's outstanding.
Thank you, commissioners. I'm sure that staff really appreciates it. And Anita. The other interesting section is at the end of Leased Housing's table, where we talk about our building bridges and some of those programs that are really nationally innovative. And we're the first trying them out, and we'll test them down the road, see how they work. Moving on, any other questions about written communications?
Commissioner Montgomery has one.
Yeah, I need to have a community partnership to come up, and I'm interested in the home ownership and what mm-hmm. happened. That's a very good article about mm-hmm. The resident that purchased the 3-bedroom.
Mm-hmm.
Just explain that a little bit. I was very impressed by that.
And introduce
and
yourself.
The way the market is now, to find out that this is really happening, as mm-hmm. Daddy said. So just kind of highlight that just a little bit.
Good evening, Commissioners. Lenita Wheeler, Director of Family and Community Partnerships. What page, Commissioner Montgomery, are you referencing?
The one on page 13 about the one that closed the escrow June 12th.
Okay.
And the 3-bedroom, okay. 2-bath townhome, and it's located in West Oakland.
Yes.
And it was below market rate purchase.
Yes.
And
So just kind of just an idea of how that happens. And then I see down here where you have residents pre-qualified for home ownership and then the voucher size. And just a couple of minutes with that.
Yes, ma'am. So the home ownership program, I believe, hands down, is one of the programs where we get the most interest. The American dream is still alive and well, and despite the expense of our market, we still have families who dream, excuse me, to own their own home, to have their kids with a backyard or whatnot, and to not be beholden to landlords anymore if they don't have to. And so this table here, the residents pre-qualify for home ownership, there are some minimum requirements in order to even be considered. It's income-based, amount of savings you have, as well as a minimum credit score. And generally, once individuals meet those very minimums, they attend an orientation where they get the standard spiel about the just labyrinth of how to maneuver through becoming a homeowner, all of the language, escrow and principal and interest, and what does that mean? And then they also get layered on top of that what's unique about being part of the subsidized homeownership when you're with the housing authority, because there are some restrictions there that don't exist for others who are not purchasing along with us. And so what we've given you is just the average of individuals who have met those minimums. We then send a packet of information over to Leased Housing, and Michelle Hassan has a special team where they plug things into their formula and they identify, based off of our information, this is the subsidy that OHA would be able to provide to you. They then take that letter to a lender, and the lender is able to say, based off of your subsidy that you would receive, based off of your credit review, off of your income, and other factors that they look at when considering, they say, we believe this is the loan amount that we would be willing to give you. And so we've just given you just the snapshot for you to understand families, 1, 2, 3, 4 bedroom, how many families within that bedroom size are searching, their average income, give or take, and then what their loan amounts are. And so naturally, the largest family is receiving the largest loan amount because they have the larger voucher size. So that's the explanation of that pre-qualified table there. And the families can take anywhere from 3 weeks to 6 years to be prepared, depending upon their situation and what it is that they need to work on throughout that process. And we do partner with them, and many of our families enroll in the Family Self-Sufficiency Program to generate some savings to assist them. We also support our families with down payment assistance programs. We partner greatly with the City of Oakland's Housing and Community Development Department. There are a lot of funds available to support. There's a lot of layered funding. If you all remember, with the mortgage crisis, many banks were required to give back to their communities. And so there are banks like Wells Fargo and others who have a fund set aside. And there are also individual development accounts, IDAs. So some families could have a wish fund, plus City of Oakland, plus FSS money, plus an IDA account, and layer their funding to allow them to be able to purchase and cover the down payment and closing costs.
Thank you very much. I think that's very good, because I remember at one time we did have some families to come in to one of our meetings some time ago and just, you know, let us see them, the ones that, so maybe sometimes we could do that.
We'd love to do that for you.
Our homeowners of the Oakland Housing Authority.
Very absolutely. Good.
Thank you very much.
You're so very welcome. Do you still want to hear about the below market purchase? Yes,
yeah,
you do.
Go ahead.
Oh. So a few months ago, we actually got contacted by Bridget. So as you know, OHA participates in lots of real estate development and below market rate homes. Once an individual purchases, they put some restrictions on that. And they say if this property or home is ever sold, it has to remain below market. So you can't just sell it to anyone who comes around. You have to also sell it to another person who would be eligible for below market. And so we got a call from our real estate development department a couple months ago saying there's one coming up. Unfortunately, the family was dissolving. There was a divorce, and they were splitting the property, and that included the home. And they said, do you have anyone who you think would be interested? And we thought, oh, my gosh, yes, we have a list of people. And so what we did is we went through the list of our families who had met the minimum qualifications. applications. We have an interest list. A few years ago, there were like 400 people on it.
Really?
We've got that down to 30-ish or so from that original list of 400. And so what we did is we went by the order of who was on that list first and also qualified and asked them if this was a property that they thought would meet their family's needs. They had the opportunity to see it, just like any of us would go and check it out. Is it close enough to school, work, or whatnot? And we narrowed it down to two families who were considered, and they were submitted it was a partnership with the City of Oakland, as well as a partnership with our own real estate development department and a lender and FCP. So there were a lot of cooks in this kitchen to make this deal work. It was not the standard 30-day close of escrow. I think it took us like 4 months or so because there's a lot of reviews, there's a lot of double checking, and ultimately we were able to support a family with the process, and we've gained more partners in that. We recently, just last week, had a debrief meeting, and we talked through how a BMR sale could be more smooth in the future. And like I said, we garnered a new partner and a lender who is also now going to come on site and support our families with education. And so we share a lot of information with our families, and sometimes they believe us, sometimes they don't, but they really believe what the lender says or what a banker is telling them about, you know, what's the realities needed for home ownership. And so we were very pleased that we had that opportunity. It doesn't come up that often. Generally, individuals in BMRs, I think they realize what they have and they hold on to it for as long as they can. And this individual did not receive the full equity. They received a portion of it. That's part of some of the restrictions that are placed on BMRs below market.
Thank you so much.
You're so very welcome.
Thank you.
Yeah,
very good. Let's give
her a hand. Thank you. That's a great story. So you see what we're saying about the cool other stuff we're doing. This, you don't see this everywhere.
All right, moving on to the next item. It's written communications. I went through all that, so I think it's just executive director report. The only thing I just want to point out, I did leave a memo on one of our residents from Palo Vista, Fiona Polk, who I've known for a very long time and think very, very highly of, just to let everyone know the current status of the case. All right.
I'd like to close the meeting in remembrance of Theola, please, whenever we do that.
We will, and I'll
send
the family.
We're getting close. We're getting close.
And that's all I have.
All right. So the next item is reports of commission committees. Well, our committee's already done its report. So were there any other committee meetings that we had? Nope. None. So now we just have announcements by commissioners.
I just have one, and it's about Census 2020. And I'm really curious whether any of our staff is appointed to really mobilize our community to be part of it.
We're working with, actually, Supervisor Chan's office in 2020, and it's being coordinated by someone that we know, and we've been in touch with them for months now, actually, and attending that. So, yeah, we're doing what we can. Yes.
And one of the statistics is for everyone not counted is $800 to $1,000 a year for 10 years.
So
it's pretty
that's
significant.
Coming up already.
It is. And then there's also job opportunities to be countered,
which
we're involved in. Yeah.
Thank you.
Well, you can do that. You can make it. Just go ahead and do it.
Oh, I was just. Don't forget National Night Out, August the 6th.
There you go.
Right. See, that's worth knowing. Very good. Thank you. Thank you, Barbara.
Oh, we usually have.
I know the Highland Authority has lots of National Night Outs planned. Huh? Okay, so August 6th.
Okay, so now we are, we are really setting new records for efficiency here tonight with this meeting. I'm very pleased with this. So now we will defer over to Janie for a moment of silence.
Yeah.
And but I think yes, and then we'll accept the motion to end the meeting or to go to closed session. Yes. All right. Okay. So now do we have a motion to end the meeting and move to closed session? Very good. Thank you so much.
I'll second.
We have a second, so we're good to go.
All right.